Okay, dear Dhamma friends, we have come to the next section of this session, and we were discussing a certain sutta, which is called Satipatthana Vibhanga Sutta. Basically, Buddha is analyzing the Satipatthana in this sutta, which is available in Satipatthana Sangyutta, where various Satipatthana related discourses were categorized. And as you can, I'll try to share the screen where I have prepared a document. Okay. Now here you can understand basically Buddha is explaining Satipatthana, a complete picture of the Satipatthana in three stages. First of all, we need to establish mindfulness, that is the Satipatthana, and then the development of the establishment of mindfulness, that is Satipatthana Bhavana. That's the development aspect. And once we are reaching to some extent, we certainly feel sort of a complete methodology, complete strategy to further enhance these insights. So that is where we need a Patipada, kind of a development or kind of a path, complete strategy, complete methodology to enhance our experience. So that is where a Patipada is coming to the picture. So last time we discussed basically Satipatthana, that is the establishment of mindfulness. This is actually already known to you. Basic establishment of mindfulness. We can use body as establishment of mindfulness. We can use feelings as a way of establishing mindfulness. And again, we can use the mind itself as a way of establishing mindfulness, and various other phenomena, whatever arising in the present moment, as a way of establishing mindfulness. Now here, if I just make a reminder or kind of a recollection, basically establishing mindfulness using the body. So you know that while at the moment we are sitting, so we can simply use this sitting posture as a way of establishing mindfulness, because otherwise there's a tendency to move to the past. Our mind might move to the past or might even go to the future, go for any kind of fantasization, rumination or daydreaming. So in order to avoid that, we are using this very body as a mechanism, as a anchoring point, in order to maintain our mind also in the present moment. Our body always lives in the present moment, and we are using that advantage in order to maintain our mind also in the present moment. Now, there are certain qualities that Buddha has highlighted while engaged in this practice. So that is also quite important, because just establishing mindfulness in the present moment is not enough in a way. So Buddha is emphasizing certain qualities. One quality is called ardent or athapi. So basically there's a function to the virya, function to the effort. So one function is, so if we get sort of lethargic, if we feel discouraged, if we feel that the results are not happening quickly, this practice is difficult, and I am useless, it is hopeless. So likewise, if there are any negative feelings are coming, if there are any discouraging feelings are coming, we have the ability to overcome them and to encourage ourselves, again to lift up ourselves, rise up ourselves, so that we are able to continue our practice. Because the practice is in a way a kind of a challenge, because our mind at the beginning may not like the practice, because it likes to stay in the past, enjoy whatever happened in the past, even to regret about the past and to daydream about the future, fantasize about the future, or even to get into certain uncertainty about the future. Even though those appear like stressful, still our mind likes to do that. So that is the, in a way, kind of an ignorant nature of our mind. But in the athapi, the virya helps us to lift it up. Never give up, not to sort of give up, rather again and again put forth enough effort to continue the practice. And while engaged in the practice, we have a balanced effort. We are not stressed. We are not in a hurry. We are doing it, but while at the moment, when you are practicing, you have a very relaxed attitude. You have a very open attitude. You have a very calm down attitude. So that is also necessary. So therefore, we can see various aspects of virya. One thing is you are never giving up. You always have the courage to continue a practice. So that kind of a relentless effort is there. On the other hand, when you are engaged in the practice, you have a balanced effort. You have a fairly equanimous mind, fairly a balanced mind in order to continue a practice. So that is another aspect. And on the other hand, you are clearly comprehending. Now, once you establish mindfulness, you have to clearly know what is happening. At this very moment, suppose you are keeping your attention on the breath, as we did in our guided sitting, we kept our attention on the breath. Now, simple establishment of the mindfulness is not enough, where we need to clearly know what is really going on. Is the breath long? Is the breath short? Is the breath warm? Is the breath cool? From which nostril is it happening? Or is it the beginning? Is it the middle? Is it the end? Or is it the gap? So likewise, so you are now carefully observing it. But the mind is fairly quiet. You are not thinking about it. You are not trying to map your, learned knowledge. You are not trying to bring book knowledge here. Rather, you have a very equanimous beginner's mind, open mind, fresh mind. But you have a certain curiosity. You are observing very carefully to understand to what is really going on. So this kind of a curiosity helps us to clearly know. So this is reflected in the term sampajano. Satima, of course, is the mindfulness where present moment awareness is there. And then having removed covetousness and the displeasure regarding the world. Vinaya loke abhijja domanasang. Now, so that is where the kind of a purity of the mind is maintained. So while we do this experiment, so we are not greedy about anything. And we are not having any resentment towards another thing. So we have a very balanced mind, completely equanimous, neither greedily attached to something or not hatefully rejecting another thing. So we have a neither regretting, neither attaching, nor rejecting kind of an attitude. So that is where the balanced mind is there. So this is where the complete right mindfulness is included. So we have a sort of no attachment or no rejection. And again, you know, there's an atapi, kind of an effort is there. And again, sometimes we define it as effort to overcome various defilements. So rather than using mindfulness to encourage defilements, so then it becomes wrong mindfulness. Rather, this mindfulness is developed while maintaining a pure mind, while maintaining a fair amount of purity in the mind, maybe temporary, but once the mindfulness is further developed, so this purity becomes sort of an inherent characteristic. So this is where we are targeting how to cleanse the mind, how to overcome the defilements, how to recognize defilements and to cleanse the mind. So these are certain aspects we can understand. So kayanupassana, vedananupassana, chittanupassana, dhammanupassana. Being aware of the body, being aware of various feelings, being aware of the mind, and being aware of various mental states as well as various other phenomena. So all these things actually helps us to establish mindfulness. And then we can go to the next step. So that is the satipatthana bhavana, the development of establishment of mindfulness. As I said, so once you establish mindfulness on whatever the phenomena, whatever the present phenomena, so that is first aspect or first stage. After that, since we are clearly scrutinizing, since we are clearly knowing, we are investigating the present moment object. So now there's a fair possibility to understand the real nature of this phenomena. How is it arising? How is it passing away? How is it changing? How long is it lasting? Is it only a single phenomena here, or is it a collection of phenomena? So likewise, so there are various information available even to this present phenomena. Now you are trying to recognize it, and as a result, you will understand the behavior of these phenomena. So you will understand the arising nature of these phenomena, the passing away nature of this phenomena. Arising and passing away nature of this phenomena. It is common to the bodily phenomena, various bodily feelings, mental feelings, and the various mental states, thoughts, and all the various phenomena, whatever you encounter, all these, whatever I have mentioned, arising, passing away, are quite common. So now, rather than learning from the book, now you yourself trying to understand this real nature. Now, this is the way that the typical Western mindfulness and the Buddhist mindfulness go in a way kind of differentiate. Now, the typical Western mindfulness may be touching, but rarely touching this aspect, because they simply stop at the establishment of mindfulness. They may be using various bodily postures, even the breath and even the mind, just to establish mindfulness. So that is also a considerable practice, but that is not enough. And Buddha is taking us further two steps. So the second step is to understand the real nature of these phenomena, just without stopping or limiting ourselves only at the mere establishing of mindfulness. So Buddha requests us to show us the path to clearly know the phenomena, to understand their real nature. So then we'll understand, okay, they have the nature of arising. They have the nature of passing away. And now you are closely observing them so that you will understand this arising nature and passing away nature. And even sometimes you probably may be able to recognize various causes. What are the causes actually causing or conditioning these various phenomena to come into the picture? And how these phenomena come into the picture is being you yourself being seen. It is not that you are hearing here, but you are keeping your attention very closely, observing it, investigating it. As a result, you yourself will understand the nature of these phenomena. Now, what is the result? Result is various insights. So various sort of insights are now happening in the mind. So your mind is in a very calm, quiet, silent position, but you are closely observing the phenomena. So this behavior of the phenomena is causing to give us a lot of insights. So these insights are sort of eye-opening insights. They are sort of glimpse of insights. So while you are having a very calm, quiet mind, immediately sort of some breaking moments happen, some sort of breaking insights happen, sort of eye-opening insights are happening. Say, for example, how impermanent they are, how unsatisfactory they are, how transient they are, how can I control this kind of a transient nature? Is there any kind of a control at all? Is there anything substantial in these processes? Likewise, you yourself is now start to question about the present moment phenomena. So these are various insights. So when these insights again and again occur, so your mind become sort of looking at the whole picture in a different angle. So far you were in the simple establishment of mindfulness, but now due to the arising of various insights, now you start to question the present experience. Rather than simply blindly accepting what others are telling, now you are questioning the whole experience. So what is the purpose? What is the purpose of this life? What is the purpose of all these grasping? Why should I hold all this? Can I hold this for a long time? Will they providing me enough satisfaction? Will they provide me lasting happiness? do I have real control or governability of all these processes? So likewise, you sort of think in a different angle so that more and more wisdom is going to arise. Now, suppose you are getting enough wisdom about this information. Then there's a possibility of sort of wisdom getting more and more improved, increased, and at one level, suppose it is maturing. On such situation, there's a possibility that the mind may completely relinquish holding. It may be temporary. It may be only for a short time, but it may release the whole thing. Now there is nothing to attach, nothing to hold, nothing to grasp. So mind has found its own freedom. Mind has found its own solace, own console, own pasture. Well, it has nothing but freedom. But unfortunately, we can't maintain it because of our past habits, because of the conditioning in the mind. Again, mind go and grasp. Again, mind go and cling. But you know, because of the various insight, you know, I mean, it's a kind of a burden to grasp. It's a kind of a hindrance to grasp. You feel the burden, you feel the weight, you feel the heaviness of grasping. Now, how to develop this freedom of mind? How to develop this complete balanced mind? How to develop this kind of powerful insight so that your grasping will be completely ceased? No more grasping is possible. You may encounter the complete purification of the mind. You may encounter the complete freedom from grasping. So that is where the Noble Eightfold Path come into the picture. So there you need a complete methodology. Yeah, you need a complete path to develop. So these insights are really convincing. Insights are so powerful. And you start to change your life so that these insights become a reality. And you are trying to live according to these insights. You are trying to be with these insights. You are trying to sort of mold your life according to these insights. And you start to value these insights. Rather than giving emphasis to these typical worldly mundane things, now you have a different goal in your life. And now what is the path in order to achieve this goal? So that is the Noble Eightfold Path. So that is where the Noble Eightfold Path come into the picture. So you have a complete proper view, right view, samadhi. And that is the right view that you are trying to sort of fulfill. So that right view you are trying to always nurture, always fertilize. And again, all the thinking patterns are now you are trying to sort of direct or sort of refine or navigate according to that view. So then becomes sammasankappa. And your behavior, your morality, you are now trying to maintain, because you know if I am doing some ad hoc kind of talking, if I am using certain harsh words, if I am trying to sort of delude my mind, pollute my mind, harm another self, using harsh words, if I am sort of making someone worry, then it is hurting yourself as well. Now you are maintaining fair amount of morality, the sila coming to the picture. And again, you need fair amount of mindfulness. You need fair amount of clarity of the mind. So that is where the samadhi come into the picture. So sort of a complete path now coming to be available. So all these path factors are helping each other. Sila, samadhi, panya. Morality, concentration, and wisdom are helping each other. The sila helps to develop fair amount of concentration. Concentration helps to maintain wisdom. And the developed wisdom also further reinforces the morality and the concentration. So likewise, sila, samadhi, panya are helping each other, are contributing to each other. So likewise, so the complete picture, this whole Noble Eightfold Path becomes sort of a way of life. It's a kind of way of living. Now the whole meditation becomes your life. It is not that you select only a certain period. Okay, I sit at this time, I walk at this time, and rest of the time you forget about it. Now you know this is a kind of a path to develop. That's a way of living. Now meditation becomes your own. Now you start to sort of convince yourself, now this is the only path. There is no any other alternative. This is the only path. So typically in Satipatthana Sutta, Buddha very clearly mentioned, Nyayasa Adhigamaya. So there's a clear path, clear direction, clear methodology. You yourself will understand. So this is the path to do. This is the path to practice. This is the way to practice. Now your own practice become sort of a strength to you. Now you are not searching from someone else, always asking from someone else, always looking at various books, thinking that I have missed anything or something like that. But rather, more and more, you yourself start to have enough confidence. Your own practice is giving you a lot of confidence, lot of guidance, lot of courage to continue the path. Now it's kind of a self-sustaining kind of a path. Various path factors are there. Right view is giving you the correct direction, and you are thinking, if it's necessary to think, you are thinking according to that right view, and you are maintaining your morality, and you are maintaining fair amount of effort to continue the path. And again, you are maintaining your attention in the present moment. And in order to see what is going on in the present moment, you have the clarity of mind, that is the Samma Samadhi. So likewise, all these path factors are helping each other, contributing each other, and gives us a complete methodology, complete system to develop. So this is the complete picture of the mindfulness according to the Buddha's teaching. But you probably can understand certain parts are not available in the typical Western mindfulness. So they typically touch the first part, first step, but rather in the Buddha's way of mindfulness actually has a complete system. First, simple establishment of mindfulness. Can use various phenomena for that, either body, feelings, mind or mental states, various phenomena. And once the mindfulness is established, now you are carefully investigating these present phenomena so that you get a clear picture what is really going on. So that is where the various insights are arising, insights are happening, and those insights are inviting you to live a life, a different way of life. They are the kind of a complete path going to be available. That is where Buddha is encouraging us to live a Noble Eightfold Path. So this is what the Satipatthana Vibhanga Sutta is teaching us. So it has three steps: establishment of mindfulness, that is Satipatthana. Second stage is Satipatthana Bhavana, the development of the establishment of mindfulness. And the last stage is the Patipada, complete path. In order to fulfill all these things, we have to live in a proper manner, practicing in a proper manner. So that is where a Patipada is coming to the picture. So that is actually completing the Satipatthana analysis or this Vibhanga Sutta. So with that, I like to conclude today's short Dhamma sermon. Now I open the session for questions.
I'm sorry, Bhante, there are currently six questions.
Yeah.
Question number one. This is a general question. Bhante, last time when explaining Satipatthana analysis, my question was, what is the difference between feelings and thoughts? Much merits. That's the end.
Feelings and thoughts. Now, suppose if we take bodily feelings, we can easily understand. Now, say while sitting, so there may be certain back pain arising. So sort of a back pain arising while sitting. So you don't need to think about it. You can really feel it. Kind of a back pain, maybe itching, maybe a little painful feeling. So this painful feeling, you can directly aware of it. You can even close your eyes And if you can pay your attention to the place where the pain is available, you can vividly feel it. But the thought, there you are paying your attention to the mind. So one after the other, there is various thoughts are coming. Say you are thinking about your mother, thinking about your father, thinking about your wife, thinking about your husband, thinking about your sister, brother, child, office, various things. So various thoughts are coming in the mind. So those thoughts also may have a feeling. That is true. But you can separate different thoughts from the feelings. Thoughts, if we are paying attention to thoughts, actually we are dealing with the Sankhara Skandha. So formations aggregate. But on the other hand, if we are trying to pay attention to feelings, there we are dealing with the feeling aggregate or Vedana Skandha. Actually, these aggregates are available together, but to which one... to which one are we giving the prominence? So that is where the difference actually happening. If we are giving prominence to the body, then we are dealing with the rupa khanda, the rupa aggregate or material aggregate. If we are giving prominence to the feelings, then we are dealing with the vedana khanda. If we are giving attention to the perceptions, various signs, marks, say mental, mental images, then we are giving prominence to the sanya khanda, perception aggregate. If we are giving more attention to the thoughts, how we construct them, how they are sort of one after the other developing, then we are closely observing the sankhara skandha. And on the other hand, if we directly see the raga mind, dosa mind, so likewise, then we can say we are giving prominence to the vijnana khanda. Actually, this is fairly interconnected. And on the other hand, when you see something, so you can recognize, okay, there's a seeing happens. When you hear something, you can understand the hearing happens. There also, you are dealing with the vijnana khanda. Say the chakku vijnana, sota vijnana, gahana vijnana, likewise. So different faculties are available. And when the respective outside component is getting connected, so in contact, so then the various corresponding consciousness of vijnana is going to arise. So this is way of analyzing the whole picture, and to which aggregate are we giving prominence can vary. So mostly when we are dealing with kayanupassana, it's the rupakhanda, the materiality aggregate that we are giving prominence. Yeah, we can go to the next question.
Question number 2 of 6. This one is mindful walking. Dear Bhante, thank you for explaining the key points we should consider when writing down the practice experience last time. I will try to present my walking practice based on this month's progress. My walking path is a carpeted corridor, which is about 25 steps in length. I start focusing on the soles of my foot and noting left and right. First, I feel the weight of my body on the heels, which gives me the indication that I am standing. When I walk, I observe the weight and the pressure produced transmits to the outside arch, small toes, and then to the big toe gradually. The feet then pushes back the body using the big toe and the ball, transmitting the pressure back using the inside arch when I'm moving forward. I can feel the variation of the roughness of the carpet on the soles and some hot and cold nature, especially on the parts which are not touching, for example, inside the arc. After 5 to 10 minutes of continuous focus, I can observe the difference of the left and right feet sensations without recalling which one is left or right foot. As advised by Swami Vansa, I try to be with these knowings without verbalizing them as much as possible. Often my mind starts to drift away to thoughts when things settle as above. I get the alert that I'm no longer with the sensations. I observe that the mind slowly comes back with this sudden alert of distraction and settles with the walking process. This happens multiple times. Initially, I felt this as a distraction. I wanted to focus on the walking process forcefully, but now I know it comes back, so it does not bother me. After about 30 to 35 minutes, all the observations seem faded away and bleached. Even the deviation to thoughts and coming back is not that dramatic. In 1 to 10 scale of intensity, knowing the observations and the state of mind during the initial stage can be 8 or 9, and at this stage it is reduced to 2 or 3. If I may ask a question, is it okay to identify the stage where all the observations and the state of mind seem blurred as a separate phase of the practice where mindfulness is established? The instructions that I've gathered from Bhante is to identify the state and be with it as much as possible. Much merits for your valuable guidance. That's the end.
Yeah, correct. You are correct. So basically, as we recognize various phenomena distinctly, very, very one after the other, so then we are in one stage, so that we can say we are recognizing the private characteristics, individual characteristics. So each and every phenomena have their own sort of individual characteristics. So we are clearly seeing them, clearly recognizing them. So more and more we see, recognize like that, so then slowly kind of a natural shift towards the sankata, the fabricated nature of them, the constructive nature of them. And then kind of a gradual shift towards the knowing common characteristics. Now all these many different various phenomena are telling us one story. So they have a nature to arise. They have a nature to pass away. Now this is not some sort of a brainstorming sort of insight. And even most of us even know it. But when you are observing it by yourself with a very calm mind, with a very quiet mind, well concentrated mind, is giving a real drastic nature, drastic change to your mind. So that's why, I mean, there's a significant change happening in the understanding of ourselves by seeing how transient they are, how impermanent they are, and how quickly they arise and pass away, and how much all these conditioned phenomena are subjected to this kind of arising and passing away, this kind of a transient nature. So how can we expect lasting happiness from these kind of transient nature? It is impossible. So that is where kind of a relinquishment, kind of a detachment, disenchantment going to happen in the mind. So once such disenchantment is available in the mind, so then everything appears like blur. Now you have lost the interest. There are various sounds, but everything appears like blur. There are various sights, things appear like blur. So you very much like you lost your appetite. And there may be various sensations. They also appear like blur, and mind is not interested. So everything appears like a flux. Sometimes Lokasayanasa used to say like a gojaya, kind of a flux. So everything is there. It is not that you are not aware of them. You are aware of them, but your mind is not interested of knowing the previous information about them. You are not now interested of looking at the details, because you know there is nothing there. I mean, there is nothing substantial, nothing important, nothing interesting. Everything is like a flux. Everything is subjected to arising and passing. Everything is so transient. Everything is beyond your control. So likewise, your mind have now sort of having kind of an insight, so that it is not interested of looking at all this information. Rather, it likes to be secluded. So things are appearing. Everything appears like a flux. So this is another level of insight, another level of vipassana practice. So therefore, just continue your practice. That's the only thing to do. Just continue your practice, and this too will pass. So this is not the end of the practice. This too will pass. So therefore, simply you need to continue your practice, and then so this flux become more and more wider, or this flux go beyond yourself or far away from yourself, appear like at bay. so that you have a kind of a freedom around yourself. You are in a sort of a freedom, established on a freedom, rather than mingle with this, all this arising and passing away nature. You're not interested of various phenomena. Various phenomena are available, but you are not interested of them. You have your own solace. You have your own freedom. So that is where the practice is leading us. Yeah. Next question.
Question number 3 of 6. This one is a theory question. Dear Venerable Sir, this relates to the Dhamma talk and the Sutta, Satipatthana analysis. The real meditation, as I understood, is not the observations, technique, or any other specific thing, but it is knowing of arising, lingering, and cessation of anything within the scope of mind. I'm quite surprised that all of Satipatthana boils down to this very simple thing. Please correct me if I am wrong, Bhante. I also recall some time back, Bhante was mentioning that the mind unites when phenomena is observed from this angle and gives rise to very profound vipassana samadhi, much higher than the samatha samadhi. Appreciate Bhante's clarification. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, that's what I actually tried to mention today. So if we are going to the Satipatthana Bhavana, the meditation aspect, so where various insights are possible. So that is actually growing inside. It is not that you are sort of getting the same insight again and again. That is also possible. But very different insights are also going to happen. So when some maturity of wisdom is happening, suppose you are developing again and again, developing this understanding. Again and again, you see the rising and passing away nature. So as a result, now today, because of today's practice, now suppose you are in wisdom coming to some level. At that time, suppose your mind is giving up everything, relinquishing everything. Now mind is released. Now mind has sort of given up everything. Nothing is grasped. Now the freedom of mind is available, but it is lasting only for, say, 1 minute. So next day also you practice. Again and again you see the rising and passing away nature of the whole thing. Now again you are developing sort of a momentum of the wisdom. Again now once you come to the culmination, again the mind release. Again the freedom of mind available. Now suppose it lasts for 2 minutes. Next day. It lasts for 3 minutes. Next day, it lasts for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, suppose 45 minutes, 1 hour. Now, where are we? Now, we are in a vipassana samadhi. Where there is no grasping, there's a freedom of mind. And your freedom of mind is not through samatha, but you have gained through wisdom. Gained through the arising of various insights. So, these insights are the ones giving you enough strength to maintain the freedom of mind. So that is where the vipassana concentration, so vipassana samadhi come into the picture. So not only at that momentary concentration, that is also what we call kharnika samadhi, that is also one aspect, but later various other vipassana samadhi going to be available, and this may be a longer period, not a single 1 minute, 2 minutes, but maybe 30 minutes, 45 minutes, 1 hour kind of a vipassana samadhi are possible. And at that time, remember, mind is fairly sort of reinforced by the wisdom. It is not that you go and stuck on an object like in a samatha. In samatha concentration, what happens is your mind get absorbed. Your mind get limited. Your mind get stuck on a single object. But here, mind stuck with nothing. Mind has attached to nothing. Mind has released everything. So this is where the vipassana samadhi come into the picture. Did I answer properly, Chatu? Did I miss any point?
I think... a second question in there. It's to talk about observations. So it's about observations. So yep. It's, I'll read out the passage. The real meditation, as I understood, is not observations, technique, or anything specific, but knowing of arising, lingering, cessation of anything with scope of mind. I'm quite surprised that all of Satipatthana boils down to this very simple thing. Please correct me if I am wrong, Bhante.
Yeah, we can say so. So establishment of mindfulness can have a variety of things. That is true. But even though such a variety is there, but ultimately when it comes to the Satipatthana Bhavana, they all show the same picture. They all tell us the same story. Because they all are actually conditioned phenomena. Conditioned phenomena has the common characteristics. So that is what mentioned in the Satipatthana Bhavana. So the arising and passing away nature, the impermanent nature, unsatisfactory nature, non-self nature. So this is what all these various aspects are showing us. So your understanding is correct. Yes.
Question number 4 of 6. This is mindful sitting. Venerable Bhante, is it all right to watch the chest and the feeling of it moving up and down as a meditation object instead of the breath or tummy? Much merits for your guidance. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, you can do it. Only thing is, now chest has a fair connectivity with the Patavi Dhatu. You know, Patavi is the sort of a tightness, heaviness, hardness. So these are the characteristics available most in the Patavi, that is the earth element. So if you are trying to keep attention to this, say chest, sometimes your mind might go and grasp that aspect. So then you feel uncomfortable. You feel like you become kind of astonished. You feel like stuck. You feel like heaviness. So that, then sort of an uncomfortable feeling might arise. But on the other hand, if you are able to maintain your attention only on the movement, constantly the chest part is going up and down or sort of moving front and backward. So that is the most thing, common thing happens if you can keep your attention at the abdomen or the tummy. So the movement is there. So the movement actually connects with the air element. The air element is easy to handle. So that is why this, when we are selecting these kammatthana, various meditation objects, so we are giving emphasis to the most easiest aspects. So if you are trying to sort of keep your attention onto the Patavi Dhatu, then it is difficult. But on the other hand, if you are able to keep your attention to the AI element, it is fairly convenient. So that is the only difference. You can give it a try and see.
Question number 5 of 6. This is mindful sitting. Dear Venerable Bhante, meditation question, sitting meditation. As per Bhante's advice, I now meditate, that is walking and sitting meditation daily rather than meditating only on weekends. I also give more weight to walking meditation as this strengthens mindfulness. I feel my practice is good as I feel very calm and feel very light during meditation. Last Friday, as I meditated with a group, we started with chanting the Metta meditation, I think it's Metta Sutta, and then Anapanasati. I'll read that again. We started with chanting, then metta meditation, and then anapanasati. As we got into anapanasati, I felt a good mindfulness of the breath. However, after some time, I felt detached from my body. I had no feeling of my body, no thoughts, but it was serene. I got worried as I felt detached from my body. I quickly brought my attention to my body and to stop meditation. Bhante, my question is, should I have continued my meditation even though I was detached from my body, or should I have come back to my body? Appreciate your guidance on how to proceed. Thank you with metta. That's the end.
Yeah, if you are able to detach from the body, just keep your attention away from the body. I mean, you don't need a body. So body may be necessary, as I mentioned, to establish mindfulness, just to sort of ignite the process, start the process, and we are sort of nurturing ourselves from these bodily processes. But later, those bodily processes giving us enough wisdom in order to even release from the body. So this is what happened to you. So you are using various bodily processes and you are observing them, And as a result, you are sort of improving your mindfulness, improving your wisdom. And later, so that wisdom, that mindfulness helps you to free from the body. So now it is not necessary to attach to the body. So try to keep your mind free from body, not to attach with the body.
Question number 6, this is the last one. Theory question. Dear Bhante, based on the Dhamma talk, once we experience and complete release and non-grasping, we get onto the path. Also, to experience the complete release and deliverance, we follow the path to get to the stage of insights. It seems that these two aspects are inside each other, like a chicken and egg scenario. Appreciate Bhante's explanation. That's the end of the question.
Rather than telling like that, you can say, so you develop Satipatthana Bhavana. So you are improving mindfulness, you are improving concentration, you are improving wisdom. So once you reach to some level of wisdom, so another insight is release of the mind, non-attached nature of the mind, non-grasping nature of the mind. So that is also appear like an insight. But you really feel it. You really feel the non-grasping nature of the mind, unattached nature of the mind. Anisthitocha viharati nachakinchi lobhe upadhyadvya. You feel that mind is not associating with anything. And once you know it, you recognize it distinctly. You recognize there's a possibility, there's a skill of non-grasping. But unfortunately, why the mind go and attach again? Why are you losing the freedom? Why again mind got and stuck? Why mind again go and get entangled? That is because still various defilements are available in the mind. So now you need a methodology to maintain this insight, to maintain this non-grasping nature. So you need to have various other factors to be facilitated. So that is where the whole life is going to get involved. So now you are trying to live in a way in order to facilitate that non-grasping nature. So the path further and further reinforces that non-grasping nature. So therefore, it is not a kind of a chicken and egg problem. Rather, you first get a glimpse of the insight. You first get a glimpse of the freedom, but you can't maintain it. You can't keep it for a long time and you can't own it. Because a lot of defilement power is so high. So you, therefore, so that freedom, you can't maintain for a long time. Now you have to find ways and means to strengthen that freedom, to prolong that freedom. So that is where the path come into the picture. Therefore, more you develop the path, the more time you can maintain the freedom. More easily you can maintain the freedom. More easily you can keep the silence of the mind or the unattached nature of the mind, unentangled nature of the mind, clarity nature of the mind. So all these things, sort of skills we can say, qualities of the mind, all these become more and more available to you. So that is what during the Satipatthana Sutta, Buddha clearly mentioned, Ekayano ayam bhikkave maggo sattanam visuddhya. Now, for the purification of mind, become more and more. When compared to the previous year, today, how pure your mind? Is it at least a little bit of lust has gone? A little bit of anger has gone? A little bit of entangled nature of the mind has reduced? Delusion has reduced? So likewise, you can feel the purification is now ongoing. And again, Soka Pariddhavanam Samatikkamaya. Now you see that I am not frequently crying. I am not frequently shedding my tears. I have become fairly coping with the situation. I can bear the situation. And I am not easily get angry. So rather I can sort of have some breaks. I can apply breaks. Soka Pariddhavanam Samatikkamaya. then Nyayasa Adhigamaya. So this Noble Eightfold Path becomes sort of a path for you, kind of a way of life for you. So now your own practice is giving you some convincing and again sort of a confidence to continue. Now previously, you don't have that confidence. Previously, you are always helping from someone, asking help from someone, looking various books, looking various others' face, because you think, I don't know, I don't know, I am doubtful about the path. But now it is not. Now you have a fair amount of confidence your own, about your own practice. So this is how the path going to be available, and this is how the complete way of life becomes kind of a path.
We received one more question, Bhante. Question number 7. Theory question. Dear Bhante, your explanation of Rupa, Vedana, Sankara, Vijnana, and not sure what the other word is, but I guess 5 aggregates, explained by you today related to Satipatthana Sutta, I found was simple. Can you kindly elaborate on it a little bit more? Many merits for your kind guidance. That's the end of the question.
So basically, Rupa Khanda, the material aggregate, is where what we are dealing with Kayanupassana. Whenever we do Kayanupassana, mostly we are dealing with the Rupa Khanda. And when it comes to the Vedana feeling, Vedana Anupassana, we are dealing with the Vedana Khanda. But the other three aggregates, that is the sanya, perception, consciousness, are distributed among others anupassana. Say when you do chitta anupassana, actually you are dealing with the sanya khanda as well as the sankhara khanda as well as the vijnana khanda. So typically we say we are dealing with the consciousness, that is the vijnana khanda. But when you see the mind, so there may be a possibility of seeing various perceptions. There's a possibility of seeing various constructing nature, fabricating nature. And even you can recognize the knowing nature. When you see something, there's a knowing of what is seen. When you hear something, there's a knowing of what you have heard. When you taste something, there's a knowing of what you have sensed. So likewise, so this knowing aspect is there. So that is where the consciousness aggregate or vijnana khanda is dealt with. And when it's coming to Dhammanupassana, all 4 aggregates or all the 5 aggregates are actually dealt with. So when you are dealing with Dhammanupassana, say there's a khanda pabba, where you see the arising nature of the rupa, arising nature of the feelings, arising nature of the perceptions, arising nature of the sankhara, arising nature of the knowing, the vijnana. So therefore, Dhammanupassana actually is touching all the aggregates, and Chittanupassana primarily touching the consciousness aggregate, but there's a possibility of touching perceptions, sankhara as well. But very purely, Kayanupassana dealing with the Rupakhanda and the Vedanupassana dealing with the feeling aggregate, Vedana Khanda.
That's the last question we had, Bhante. We just have a quick announcement. There is a 5-day retreat with Bhante from 30th of November, so tomorrow, to the 4th of December via Zoom, which is organized by the Sri Lankan team. Anyone who wants to practice can use this as an opportunity. I think Auntie will post up a little flyer in the chat window if you want further information. So with that, we'd like to conclude the session. We had a good number of questions today, which is great. And we nearly finished early today, which is also good, maybe for Bhante. So with that, I'd like to thank Bhante and pass our merits for giving up valuable time, making sure this program happens. Also to the organizers and also those people seen and unseen behind the scenes participating or being involved. And lastly, most of all, to the practitioners, everyone who's joined in, because without you, this program wouldn't go ahead. So with that, I'd like to conclude. To everyone, sayonara.
තෙරුවන් සරණයි. සුඛී හෝතු.